of like a victimless crime, if, even if they die, because you're keeping the nursery in business. You're giving yourself lots and lots of pleasure. You're creating, you're contributing to the economy. And if the plant sadly does die, it just goes back on the compost heap.
Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. In this episode, I'll be chatting to Teresa Talbot, a boutique florist and garden consultant based in Glasgow. Following a successful broadcasting career with the BBC and being a well-known fiction author, Teresa embarked on a new path, training with some of the best florists in Scotland and the UK to launch Willow and Herb at the start of the Great Lockdown. Her passion for floristry, including blooms grown from her own plot, means she has cultivated a reputation for natural, rustic style arrangements. You may also know her as a Scotland Grows magazine columnist, where she offers seasonal advice on the best blooms and foliage for your arrangements. Teresa, welcome to the Scotland Grows Show. I am delighted to have you here with us and excited today to chat all things floral with you.
Thank you, MT. Thanks so much for inviting me along. It's a manky day outside. It's pouring with rain, so it's lovely to sit in here with my cup of tea and have a little chat with you.
And I think your story for listeners will be hugely inspirational, because you went through a really big career change during lockdown. You went from being the familiar voice that people might recognise from being in arrears previously on Radio Scotland to returning to a bit of garden design, which you had done 15 odd years ago. And then you moved into bespoke floristry. So can you talk us through a wee bit of this really exciting career shift?
I hope it is inspirational. This is difficult to explain in a linear way, right? So I'll try not bore everyone. I've been a freelance journalist for 25, 30 years or something. Can't remember. Long, long, long time. But within that time, I did many different things, as many freelancers do, as you probably do, MT. It's a case of someone says, can you? And you say yes before they've even finished the question. Yeah. So I've been a journalist. I was a writer. I'm a novelist. I went back to college. I'd always wanted to be a garden designer. And one day I thought, I'd like to be a garden designer. Then thought, why don't I? So I went back to college, and I was working for the BBC at the time, but again on a freelance basis. So managed to do my full-time college course. And because it was really easy to get weekend shifts at the BBC, I did college course Monday to Wednesday and worked in the BBC Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I probably should have had a day off, but I didn't. So I quickly realised I didn't really want to be a garden designer. I didn't like sitting designing. Designing's not my thing. I don't really like designing. I like just planting. I like doing seeds. I like things to grow organically, whether that's in a house, whether it's in a garden. I just like things to develop with your personality. So I didn't really do anything with it, but I presented the gardening programme on BBC Radio Scotland for a few years, among my other tasks there. And when lockdown came, being freelance, I was one of the freelancers that slipped through the net and didn't get any furlough, didn't get, you know, I was doing travel at the time, or part of my job was doing travel at the BBC, so that obviously no one was travelling anymore. So I quickly had to think of plan B, C, D, E, whatever it was. And I needed something that I could work outside so I could stay within the rules. Because as I said, I didn't get any furloughs, so suddenly I was snookered. So I thought, right, garden consultations. Because I was on lots of Facebook groups noticed that people were doing what I called the plague walks. Remember, we were allowed out for a half hour walk and everyone was doing their garden. Everyone that had a bit of a plot, window box, plant, whatever, going mad in the garden. And people were saying, oh, I'm seeing all these lovely gardens. Can I do this? Can I do that? And I thought, I put a shout out and said, would anyone like a personal shopper for the garden? So I thought, right, I could just go around, and it was more like a right plant, right place. So I put a little shout out in one of the Facebook groups, would anyone be interested in this service? And it was like a tsunami. So I had a lovely time just wandering around people's gardens, social distance, of course, allowing, and looking at their bare plot and saying, this is what you could plant, giving them a plant list. So that was a shopping list. And that kind of grew from there. And obviously it was seasonal. And I'd always made sort of Christmas candles and done my Christmas wreaths and things. So someone said, would you be doing more floristry along with your Christmas things? And of course I said, yes, of course, that sounds great. But I had kind of, I thought, actually, that's like the kind of missing limb of what I'd been doing, because I really love working with plants and flowers and things. So kind of grew from there. So it was probably a much longer answer than you were anticipating.
Not at all, because journeys which aren't linear obviously are much more interesting than journeys that were. And you, I know, had always secretly wanted to be a florist, hadn't you, to start a floristry business. So now that you're doing that, is it everything you dreamed it was going to be, or is it come?
No, I didn't realize I'd need to clean my own buckets. That's not a euphemism, by the way. I thought it was all very glamorous. And I quite often get messages from people, and they're usually from quite glamorous women, who I'm not glamorous, incidentally, who say things like, I fancy being a florist. Can I come and be your assistant? And I have to explain to them that there's nothing glamorous about it. A, I can't afford an assistant because I don't really have that much. You know, my studio is tiny. It's lovely, and I do love working with flowers, but it's bloody hard work. And rightly, it should be hard work. It's a hard career. It's not I'm not kind of faffing about with flowers. And I absolutely love it. And much of the time I do faff about with flowers. But, you know, going to the market at 5 o'clock in the morning, spending 3 hours on wholesaler websites, trying to work out which flower that you can order. And then by the time you get to it, it's sold out, and friends will say, oh, can you get me such and such? So I spend hours and hours and hours looking, and then they might get back and go, oh, I don't know, could you get me another one? What about a different shade? And I'm like, no, I don't think you understand how this works if you're looking for something specific. So, but the actual flowers are amazing, and I love working with flowers, and I mainly now do events and weddings, and that is just wonderful because my wedding couples are fabulous.
You don't work out of a floristry shop front. You have created a lovely...
No, no one would employ me. That was one of the reasons I went freelance 30 years ago. I was basically unemployable, and I remember being told I was unemployable, and I didn't actually argue with that fact. And I went freelance, and I've just always had a freelance mindset. And let's face it, who's going to want an old bird like me in their shop?
Once they see your flowers, though, that it must be an absolute game changer. So you've got a floral home studio, and I guess doing weddings and events means no 2 days are really the same.
Well, no, they're all completely different. I think that must be the same in florist shops anyway, but I'm so used to that with the job that I did. Although I was known for the traffic and travel on the BBC, I produced, I wrote comedy, I presented the news, I was a news editor in a different station, I was a news journalist, I was a writer, I would present and host at various book events and shows. So I was always used to doing something different. So that was always part of my mindset, and maybe why, apart from the fact that I wouldn't be suited to a shop because I'm an old bird, as I keep saying. It's different all the time, and I grow some of my own flowers as well, but it's different all the time because every single wedding is different. And it's lovely because I just meet so many lovely, lovely wedding couples. And let's face it, it's such a big thing for couples to, you know, when they're booking a florist. They will never have spent that much on flowers in their lives. Even Harry and Meghan, you know, when Philippa Caddock, who was their florist, she's one of my all-time heroes, she's wonderful. they look as though they've got money to burn, but they wouldn't be spending that much money on flowers every week. So it's a huge investment, it's a huge commitment, and wedding flowers are very expensive, and they're expensive for a reason. So I love to, I love it when I can strike up a relationship with wedding couples, and usually I meet them about 6 months before. That's the consultation, is usually about a year or 6 months before. Although today I had a consultation with someone that's getting married in a couple of weeks because they've just decided, oh crikey, let's just do it. So that's also nice. That's a different style altogether. But you then strike up a relationship with them, and it's just it's lovely. They're all just, yeah, it's nice. Yeah. So it's not just like they're not just coming in and buying a bunch of flowers. You're making a connection, and it's an investment. And I always say to them, what's important to you? What's important to your day? The aesthetic, when you go in with flowers, what's the most important? And then we kind of work from there. So it's...
And I know from stuff that you've written before for Scotland Grows magazine that you are hugely passionate about sustainable floristry and about the whole grown, not flown movement. So...
Well, right, I'm going to put a caveat to that, okay, yeah. Because I don't want to, 90% of my flowers are not homegrown because I couldn't run a commercial, well, because I'll have people coming on saying you can run a commercial business without it, but basically I couldn't run my business on homegrown flowers because I don't have the space. It's very difficult for a small... I am very passionate about seasonality. I would love to just have the grown, not flown. But there's another couple of sides to that that I've been sort of looking into. But one of the reasons I kind of want to backtrack, as I do, nothing's linear with me, as we've established. It's very hard. If I use just one flower farm mm-hmm. for my flowers, that takes a huge amount of time trying to source those flowers. Most of the wedding couples and the event couples that come to me or come to any florist, they're looking for a specific color palette, they're looking for a specific design. And if you can only offer them a limited design, then, you know, and a limited color palette, which is fine if you've got a flower farm, and lots of flower farms are very, very successful florists because they know what they're growing, they know in a year in advance. And but if I have to use five or six different flower farms in the UK, that puts the price up by several hundred pounds because I've got deliveries for each and every one. And if someone wants a rose in December for their wedding, and I would say, no, you can't have that. If you want a Crispidia in June, well, no, we can get them in June here. But that's, you know, so for what I offer clients, I try to get them to go down the seasonal route. And I would love to have more homegrown things, but I grow some of my own flowers. It's nice because I can then make the bouquets very unique. I can put in different elements that they might not have. And I've just noticed a flower I've got grown out there. I'm pointing outside as though you know where I am. And I've never seen it before. And it's pink. And it's got kind of splashes of dark pink and white through it. And I'm going to use it in a bridal bouquet next week. I'm like, ah, wow. And I know that won't be in any other bouquet next week because I don't even know what it is. It's just kind of popped up. And like a random bird dropped a random seed. So I am very passionate about the homegrown flowers and the seasonal flowers, but I don't want to be a hypocrite and say that I do it because I do my best, but it's small scale. I wouldn't be able to have a business.
But there's certainly a bigger movement across the country of small, very small flower farms starting to grow up, isn't it? Push their wares out there as well. So if you had more local flower farms to you, then yes, it would make it all much more sustainable, wouldn't it?
It is, but it's difficult. And I don't think we've had the investment in floristry or flower farms that maybe like the Dutch government have. So we've not really had the investment. So it's, and don't forget, everything's done a year in advance. So if you're starting a flower farm, you're not going to see any return for at least a year. And that's a huge investment for someone to make. So I think it's not something...
Yeah, because the return on investment is...
The return takes a long time and you need a bit of land. And it's not something that you can do if you've got a couple of kids and you're you know, you don't have a lot of time, and you've, you know, you can, you maybe can only work at night. So it's, but it would be nice if there were more local nurseries. But it's difficult for an independent florist to use local nurseries. It's difficult to use them, you know, getting a small amount of flowers. You know, if your turnover's huge, that's fine. So I'm just thinking the more people appreciate maybe sort of more unusual varieties, and we can use British flowers, then maybe more people will, there'll be a bigger demand, and then they won't maybe be, they're not expensive, they're the same price as other flowers, but there might be a better demand, and then flower farmers will be able to thrive and grow.
So which flowers are your favourite flowers then for using in all of your seasonal arrangements? And take us through all four seasons.
Right. Well, I can't answer that, because I can answer my favourite plants for the garden. I can't answer my favourite flowers because they change. It's like my husband said something about flowers, and he has two sons, and I said, well, that's like saying, who's your favourite son? And he said, don't be ridiculous. And he only said that because I know what his favourite is. He's not got a favourite. Flowers, oh, crikey, I like flowers that dance. I like flowers that move. Static flowers, maybe like a rose is quite a static flower, like a commercially grown rose is quite static. It's quite a stiff stem. But then if you put it beside something that's a bit, like I've got some Persicaria out there, and I've got four different types, and I've got one that I can never remember the name of, you know, that's a long slender stem. So that kind of dances beside the rose. So I like flowers with a bit of movement. I love summer. Oh, do you know what do I like the best? I don't know. It's so difficult. I love colour. I love colour and lots of it.
And you'll be able to use
the
foliage as well in all of your...
Yeah, I love foliage. So foliage, and most wedding couples tend to ask for eucalyptus. And that's because they're only seeing eucalyptus. The season for eucalyptus is kind of between September and May. In between then, in the summer months, it's not as good and it won't be guaranteed. But if you show wedding couples different types of foliage, or if you just say, leave it to me, leave it to your florist. You know, give them a vibe. I say to me, like, show me pictures. I'll never, ever replicate a bouquet. I can't even replicate my own bouquet, but I like a vibe. So if you show me what your vibe is it boho? Is it formal? Is it? And then we can do that. And just if someone's dead set on a particular bouquet in a particular style, and it's like, no, that is it. I'm not swaying from that. I want that one. Then, as much as I hate saying it, I think, well, that's wonderful, but I'm not the florist for you, because I can't read. Well, I suppose I could, I just don't want to. And it's not, because flowers are natural, they're always different. So what might be my favourite today might not be my favourite tomorrow. I just bought a David Austin, well, I didn't buy it, I got it for a Christmas present, David Austin Rose Scepter Dial, and it's pink, beautiful, got three of them, because you buy three, you get like 10% off or something, or threepence back or something like that. And I bought it. It was part of a Christmas present. I said, oh, yeah, I'll have that. Thanks. We do a secret Santa in my husband's family, and we've got a £50 limit. So I think that was like 52 quid for the three roses. So I said, oh, and you have to buy the same variety. So I set a dial, liked the picture, and it has a strong smell of myrrh. And I thought, oh, that sounds really wildly exotic and gorgeous. My God, I didn't realise. I hate the smell of myrrh. I had no idea what it smelled like. I only knew it from blowing Christmas carols. Who the hell knows what myrrh smells like? Well, it smells like a cross between really horrible cough sweets and TCP, but other people seem to like it. And it just seems to be my nose that doesn't like it. And I'm trying to acclimatise my nasal taste to it in the way that you can acclimatise your way or get used to certain tastes. So that wasn't my favourite flower last year. And this year I've decided I do like Scepter Dial. So
that might be one to make a bride smell before she just gets a whiff at the altar then.
Well, but whenever I let other people smell it, they love it. They really, really love it. And things like rosemary, I used to put a lot of rosemary in bouquets, but it can sort of slightly affect your blood pressure. So I'll say to brides, don't sniff that too much. You'll be getting giddy down there, or grooms. Because, I mean, come on, let's hear it for the boys. I think we need to be a wee bit more adventurous with the boys with flowers as well. I love seeing a groom having a bouquet, if he can, if he's brave enough. So favourite flowers, I'm growing Agrostemma just now, which is commonly known as the corncockle. That's my new favourite. Until
Until something
tomorrow,
else.
with something else. It's beautiful. It sways. It dances. It's gorgeous.
So does everything that you grow in your garden have to be something that will eventually potentially make it into one of your arrangements?
No, I'm the worst garden designer
Not
in
just
the
growing
world.
for other people's use or for your work, you're growing for your own pleasure too.
I grow it because I see it, and I'm an impulse buyer. I don't buy clothes. I don't buy shoes. I buy plants, and I can't stop. And if I see it, I'll buy it. And then I think, oh, right, I know about garden design. I should be designing this. And if there's a space, it goes in. That's it. So I'm always thinking, right, it's neither use nor ornament. It's going out, but it's always ornamental. So quite a lot I'll use. But then Heuchera, which is that's one of my favorite. Actually, you asked me for my three favorite plants, and I've now. They're now growing, growing, growing. The list is growing. So Heuchera is one of my favourites, and you wouldn't think you could use that in a bouquet because it's quite a short growing plant. It's got the most amazing foliage. So if you're having a little jar arrangement, you could certainly grow it in that. Buttonholes, it's kind of okay. You've sort of kind of you need to wire it. The foliage can go a bit floppy. But the flowers from Heuchera, which is not grown for its flowers, it's got these tall spikes and it's very frothy. They're marvelous in bouquets, and no one ever knows what they are. So they think they're much more exotic than that. If you need a Heuchera in your garden, they're gorgeous. So I try to find a use for a lot of things, like grasses and things. I grow a lot of grasses and I'll dry them. And poppies, grew a lot of poppies this year. By the time I go out to pick them, the petals have fallen off. You've really got to be fast on the mark. But the seed heads are gorgeous. So although it would be nice if I could use everything, I don't because I've got tiny little geraniums that are only like 2 inches tall. But actually, I've changed my mind. Yes, they will be used because they could be used in cake flowers. Hang on, just let me make sure that geraniums aren't poisonous. I don't think they are. And this is just a top tip. If you're doing your own wedding and you're doing your own cake flowers, don't use anything that's poisonous because it's not very good. Right, I don't
And
think it's
growing
toxic.
your own in the garden to, sustain your own floristry business obviously has the added difficulty that everything is seasonal and we're bound by the weather. So, we've had this enormously long heat wave where some things liked it and some things didn't. And now we're looking at a potential week of torrential rain.
I know, and I don't. I've got these like these tiny wee mini greenhouses, and because I'm inherently lazy, I take everything out of it when it gets too hot. Then the rain starts, and then I'm like, oh God, can I be bothered going back there? So everything gets drowned. So anything in my garden has to be really tough. If you're not tough, just get out. It's toughen up or get out. I can't be bothered faffing about with. I'll never grow ranunculus again. That's it. Until next year, and then I'll be saying the same thing. They're just absolute divas. But that's it, you are hostage to fortune. So, I mean, those beautiful sceptre dial roses, I'm looking at them just now. They're getting battered by the rain. The petals are falling off. I was hoping to use them next week, but I've got a fabulous flower farm up the road. So I will be running up to them and buying some. I won't be taking them. So I'll be using some of their roses. And they're the lovely thing. About after me saying that I can't really use, you can't always use homegrown blooms. But the beautiful thing about using garden roses and garden flowers is the scent. You don't get the scent. Remember, people say, or you hear people say, oh, flowers don't smell the same as they used to. And that's because they're commercially grown and they're grown in sort of very specific greenhouses or they're chilled for a couple of days or weeks. Before you get them. And everything's got a kind of cost to it. You've got to decide, do you want beautiful colour, do you want beautiful scent, or do you want your flowers to last for 3 weeks? That's it. You can't have everything. Oh, and I'll tell you another thing, quite a lot of when I'm doing wedding consultations, it's never ever been the wedding couple, it's usually someone else, like a friend or something. How long do the wedding flowers last for? Longer than the champagne. And that's as much as I'm prepared to say. When people say, do you think they could last for a couple of weeks? I'm like, I don't even think I'll last a couple of weeks. So no.
Well, the bride doesn't really care because they're generally gone after the wedding. They don't really care.
Well, the wedding couple, it's the thing that you have to let people know how important it is for wedding flowers is they've got to look their best the moment the wedding couple, the bride or the groom or both are walking down the aisle. That's when everything is geared toward that. Like a gift bouquet will open over the days and weeks and you're like, oh, that's lovely. Oh, that Alstroemeria has just opened. That's beautiful. But with wedding flowers, they've just kind of, they've got to be on show right at that. But, you know, 3:30 at the city halls, whatever, you know, day. So that's, what were you asking? You were asking my 3 favourite garden plants, weren't you?
Well, I haven't yet, but yeah, we're coming around to that.
So. Right, because oh, I thought that's what I thought I'd kind of forgotten the question because I'm hopeless.
So, if so you only have 3 plants then in your garden, and that doesn't have to be flowers that you would necessarily use. So, right. If you were starting all over again and you're only allowed to have 3 plants in your garden.
Oh, no, you didn't say I was only allowed. You said my 3 favourites.
No,
oh, no. Right. For shrubs, I'd say Heuchera. No. I've changed my mind. I've said Euonymus.
Yeah.
And there's all different types of Euonymus. Now, I quite like the Silver Gaiety. They're great. You can stick them in a shady corner. Sambucus nigra, black lace. It looks a wee bit like an Acer, but it will survive anything. You can actually cut it down to ground level in January. It'll grow in sun, it'll grow in shade, it will grow anywhere. It's fantastic. And apparently, you can put it in your gin. I'm not brave enough to do that yet.
It's got a lovely flower and it's got dark foliage. It's so
beautiful black foliage, dissected foliage, and the Euonymus is gorgeous. It's green, vibrant green, and again, very, very good in shade. There's different ones out now. It depends if you get the Japonica or there's all different styles, but that will happily grow away out of neglect. And Skimmia, but the Skimmia Q Green, that's my favourite Skimmia. It's got beautiful little green flowers and it smells divine and it's got the glossiest leaves. Again, stick it in, forget about it. So that's your go-to shrubs. Well, they're my go-to shrubs.
You would have a lovely foliage garden if you had only them in them with different colours of foliage, different textures. You know, that would be
well, if I only had them, then I would add my Persicaria, which is a really good ground cover. And then I would have, and that's a perennial, then I would have Heucheras, which is an evergreen perennial. And then I would just go mad and I'd just keep planting things because I can't stop. Once you plant one thing, it's almost like an addiction, isn't it?
Yeah,
I just don't have any space in the garden anymore. And I've got all these seedlings ready to be planted. I don't have any space. And I don't know what I'm going to do. And I've pretended to my husband I've grown them for someone else. So I'm going to have to invent friends and then invent a fallout. And so I don't know what to do because I've got too many. I'm getting a wee bit overwhelmed. And instead of finding a place, I'm now looking at the seed catalogues and I'm buying more for next year.
I'm the same. Most women have to sneak clothes or shoes in by their husbands. I have to sneak the plants in. I have to literally put them in the boot of the car until he's not around and then sneak them in through the side gate.
But I think that's actually a bit of a media myth. I think most women are into their plants. I think we're led to believe that it's clothes and shoes. It's all plants.
Where did that plant come from, Halsey? Oh, I grew that from seed or... Oh, that was a cutting of one at the other side of the garden, did you know? Oh, yeah, I've been growing that one for years. I've just moved it there just now.
Well, luckily my husband doesn't really notice stuff. He just knows that the garden's full and if I'm in a nursery and I'll go, oh, I think I'll buy that. And he's like, no, you must stop. So then I just kind of order it online and then it turns up when he's out and he doesn't really know.
The delivery man to put it around the side, just hide it, please.
But it's like, it's kind of like a victimless crime, even if they die, because you're keeping the nursery in business. You're giving yourself lots and lots of pleasure. You're creating, you know, you're contributing to the economy. And if the plant sadly does die, it just goes back on the compost heap. Hey-ho.
Great. I'm going to quote that, a victimless crime buying plants.
It's a victimless crime. And also, it's cheaper than a bottle of wine sometimes. Depends how cheap your wine is. So... there you
hopefully
go.
Hopefully that will inspire lots of listeners that Teresa has given
to drink wine.
Well, she's given you permission to go out this weekend and spend on your plants.
Oh, do just buy lots of plants. If you've got any spare cash, buy hundreds of plants. It's great. It just gives you so much pleasure. Although you can
Absolutely.
spend 200 quid and it looks, loads and loads and loads of plants in your trolley. You get it back, you put them in the garden, and you think, is that it?
Yeah.
So grow them, take cuttings, grow from seeds.
So on that kind of note then, and going back to all of your garden design experience, what would be the best piece of gardening advice you could give now to finish to new gardeners or to people who have maybe just never gardened and just want to get out and start doing something?
Never be afraid of making mistakes. There's no such thing as making a mistake. You wouldn't not buy a sofa for 30 years because you were frightened of buying the wrong colour. If a plant dies, it's a plant. You've not burnt down an orphanage. Just try things. Go around neighbours' gardens, maybe ask permission, have a look, whatever works in neighbours' gardens. Just keep experimenting and just ask for lots of advice and mulch, mulch, mulch. And start small and don't be overwhelmed.
Great tips there to get people out in the garden. So I
Absolutely. Just go out and do it. It's your green space. Do what you like. And you know something, see if you want garden gnomes and you want, to color clashes, do whatever you like. Don't go with trends. Do whatever you like.
yes, because it's everyone's own individual garden space. It should be an
It's
extension
your
of your house
space.
and somewhere you want to be in. You want to make it accessible for yourself.
And if you move into a house and you don't like plants in the garden, just chuck them. You can either give them away or put them in a compost heap because you would not live with someone else's sofa. You would not live with someone else's hideous wallpaper. Don't live with plants. Life's too short to live with things you don't like, and life's too long to get it wrong. So just get
Yeah,
into the
what have you
garden.
got to live with plants that you don't want just because they're
Ah.
good looking plants? Yeah, you can always rehome them. Gardeners are very generous at giving away and also very accepting of taking other people's plants.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I've ended up with a lot of random plants that people have dug up, don't want in the garden, and thought, oh, well, she'll take them. And I'm like, of course I'll take
I know
them.
you're like the refuge for kind of,
I'm like
sad
the
and lonely
orphanage
homeless
for
plants.
homeless plants, and I have no, nowhere to put them. But I think, okay, fine, I'll dig up another wee bit of lawn here. Another wee bit. It's slowly we're losing lawn altogether, but it'll be fine. Well, thank you so much, Reese. That was fabulous to talk to you today, and thank you for telling us a wee bit about your really exciting career shift.
Thanks so much for inviting me along.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Root subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.